All right, so get this. We're going back to the Roaring Twenties.
Oh, yeah.
Think open roads, flapper dresses, and a legal battle that's still shaping how we buy and sell stuff online.
It really is fascinating how a case from 1925 is still so relevant.
Exactly. And it all comes down to this Supreme Court showdown, Buck v. Quaikendal, which basically reminds us why the Commerce Clause is like the MVP of a unified national market.
I mean, it's all about keeping those state lines from becoming like trade barriers, right?
Exactly. Like, imagine if every state could just block goods and services willy-nilly. It'd be total chaos.
Oh, absolutely. We wouldn't have a national economy at all.
So today we're going to deep dive into the original case documents, some legal briefs, and even some AI analysis.
Ooh, sounds like a fun mix.
It is. So let's kick things off with Mr. Buck himself, an entrepreneur who just wanted to run a bus line between Seattle and Portland.
Seems simple enough, right?
Right, you'd think so. He even followed all of Oregon's regulations to a T. But then Washington State throws up a giant roadblock, denying him a certificate of public convenience and necessity.
Ah, yes, the infamous certificate.
And they claimed it was because the route was already adequately served.
Yeah, right. It sounds like a pretty flimsy excuse, if you ask me.
So was this certificate just a way for Washington to protect its own businesses from competition?
You hit the nail on the head. It's a classic example of protectionism disguised as regulation.
So on the surface, they could say, oh, we're just concerned about traffic or service quality.
But the court saw right through that.
They were like, nope, you're trying to stifle interstate commerce, which is Uncle Sam's territory. Not yours.
Exactly. And that's where the Commerce Clause steps in, that part of the Constitution that gives Congress power over interstate trade.
It's like the Constitution's way of saying, hey, states, I know you like to do your own thing, but when it comes to trade, we got to play by the same rules.
Right. And Buck v. Quaikendal basically cemented that principle. The Supreme Court made it crystal clear that states can't just throw up barriers to trade from other states, even if they try to dress it up as something else.
So it's not just about what a law says, but what its real purpose is?
Precisely. And that's a crucial point for any lawyer to understand.
Absolutely. So things are already heating up, and we haven't even gotten to the Supreme Court's ruling yet.
Oh, it gets even juicier, trust me.
I can't wait. So what happened when Mr. Buck tried to fight back against Washington's decision?
Well, his initial attempts to get the decision reversed, those were unsuccessful.
Oh, so this wasn't just some small claims court case.
No, sir. This was a constitutional question that needed the big guns, the highest court in the land.
The Supreme Court, talk about high stakes.
Imagine being Mr. Buck at this point. You followed the rules, invested your time and money, and now it all comes down to 9 judges in Washington, D.C.
What a David versus Goliath moment.
Absolutely. And you know what?
What?
The court ultimately sided with Buck. Yeah, delivering a major victory for the free flow of commerce between states.
I bet that sent shockwaves through the legal world.
Oh, you better believe it. This case set a major precedent.
So it wasn't just about Mr. Buck and his bus line anymore. It was about setting a standard for how states can and cannot regulate interstate commerce.
Exactly. And the court's message was loud and clear. If every state could just block goods and services from other states under the guise of, you know, public convenience, then we wouldn't have a national economy at all.
Makes total sense, but I'm guessing it wasn't a unanimous decision, right?
You're sharp. You're right. There was a dissenting opinion from Justice McReynolds.
Okay, so what was his beef?
Well, he didn't go into a ton of detail, but it seems like he probably had a more traditional view of states' rights.
Ah, so that classic tension between state and federal power.
Exactly. It's a debate that continues to play out in courtrooms even today.
It's fascinating to see how these same questions keep popping up in modern legal battles. Like, it's this ongoing tug of war between states wanting autonomy and the need for a unified national market.
It is, and it really highlights how relevant Buck v. Quaikendal remains nearly a century later.
I mean, this wasn't just about one man and his bus line. It was about setting a precedent that continues to shape how we buy and sell stuff across state lines.
And it all boils down to this concept called the Dormant Commerce Clause.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to need you to break that down for me. What exactly is the Dormant Commerce Clause, and why should someone who's never even set foot in a courtroom care about it?
Well, think of it this way. The Dormant Commerce Clause is like a safety net for interstate commerce.
Okay.
It basically prevents states from making laws that would unfairly give their own businesses or residents an advantage.
At the expense of those from other states, right?
You got it. So even if Congress hasn't passed a specific law on something, the Dormant Commerce Clause is there to protect the free flow of goods and services across state lines.
So even if a state law seems neutral on the surface, it could still violate the Dormant Commerce Clause if its real effect is to, like, mess with interstate commerce.
Exactly. The court has to look beyond what the law says and consider its actual impact.
So, like, what it really does, not just what it's supposed to do.
Right. And that's why Buck v. Quaikendal is still so relevant today. It set that precedent that states can't just use sneaky regulations to hide protectionist measures.
Yeah, I'm starting to see how this case from way back when is still making wave. But can you give us some real-world examples of how the Dormant Commerce Clause plays out in, Like modern legal battles?
Sure, let's say a state passes a law that says all trucks passing through have to go through this super expensive and time-consuming inspection.
Even if they've already been inspected somewhere else?
Yep, even if they've got a clean bill of health from their home state.
Wouldn't that create a huge traffic jam at the state borders and, like, mess up interstate trucking routes?
You're catching on, that's exactly what would happen, and that's where the Dormant Commerce Clause comes in.
Okay.
The state might try to argue that the inspections are for safety, but a court would probably take a closer look.
To see if it's really about safety or just about protecting local trucking companies from competition?
Exactly. It's all about figuring out the real motive.
So even if a state has a legitimate interest, like safety, they still can't create unreasonable burdens on interstate commerce.
That's the gist of it. It's a balancing act. And this is where things get really interesting for lawyers.
Oh, how so?
The lawyers have to be able to analyze a law, understand its purpose, and determine if it passes the Dormant Commerce Clause test.
So they have to be able to predict potential challenges and come up with arguments that are backed by solid legal precedent like Buck v. Quikendall.
Exactly. It's like being a legal detective.
I like that. So they have to connect the dots between the facts and the legal principles and then present a convincing case to the court.
Right. And that's exactly why we're doing this deep dive into Buck v. Quikendall. It's not just a history lesson. It's a foundational case that helps us understand the complexities of interstate commerce and the legal battles that are still being fought over it.
This is all so fascinating. So Buck v. Quikendall isn't just some old legal case. It's a precedent that's still alive and kicking, impacting our lives today.
Absolutely. And it's a great example of how one single case can have this ripple effect across the legal world.
It shapes not only the outcome of specific disputes, but like the whole evolution of legal thinking.
Right. It's like a building block for how we interpret the law.
Okay, so we've established that Buck v. Quikendall is a landmark case with lasting impact, but it didn't like settle all the arguments about state power over interstate commerce, did it? What are some of the ongoing challenges or gray areas?
You're right. The debate is far from over. The world of commerce is constantly changing, and with it, the legal challenges.
I mean, think about the internet and e-commerce. Like, suddenly we're dealing with virtual goods, online marketplaces, transactions that cross multiple state lines, even international borders sometimes.
It's like Buck v. Quikendall on steroids.
Haha. I love that analogy. So how do courts apply these principles that are like a century old to the fast-paced digital world of modern commerce?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Courts are wrestling with that right now.
So give us an example.
Okay, well, how much power do states have to regulate online platforms that operate in multiple states?
Or can a state impose regulations on a company that's based in another state but sells stuff to its residents?
Those are some of the big questions, and the answers can have a huge impact on how we do business in the digital age.
It's like the Wild West of online commerce, right?
In a way, yeah, and that's why understanding the Commerce Clause, the Dormant Commerce Clause, and cases like Buck v. Quikendall is more important than ever.
Because these are like the legal foundations upon which we're building the future of commerce.
Exactly, and it's not just about the big companies. Either it affects small businesses, entrepreneurs, anyone who's buying or selling goods and services across state lines.
Okay, so Buck v. Quikendall might be from the 1920s, but its legacy lives on in the digital age. It's a reminder that even in a world of, like, crazy technology, the fundamental principles of law still shape how we live, work, and do business.
It's all about finding that balance between state autonomy and a unified national market, a balance that ensures fairness and prevents any one state from having too much power over interstate commerce.
And for legal professionals, it means staying ahead of the curve, understanding how legal precedent applies to new challenges, and being able to craft creative, compelling arguments that are rooted in solid legal reasoning.
It's a constantly evolving field, and that's what makes it so exciting.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground today, from the history of Buck v. Quikendall to its modern implications. What are some key takeaways that our listeners, especially those in the legal profession, should really remember?
Well, first and foremost, Buck v. Quikendall is like a giant reminder that the Commerce Clause isn't just some like abstract legal concept. It has real consequences for, you know, businesses and regular people all over the country.
Yeah. Right. It's like the backbone of our economy, making sure that goods and services can flow freely between states.
Exactly. It prevents states from creating this like crazy quilt of different regulations that could totally stifle trade and innovation.
So, like, the next time I order a cool gadget from a website in another state, I can thank Buck v. Quikendall for making that possible.
You got it. And for legal eagles, this case really highlights how important it is to think critically and strategically about any state regulations that might mess with interstate commerce.
It's not enough to just read the law. You have to understand, like, what it's really trying to do.
Right, exactly. You have to understand its purpose, its potential impact on interstate commerce, and whether it's a legitimate use of state power or just a sneaky way to try and protect local businesses.
So lawyers need to be, like, legal detectives sniffing out the real motive behind these regulations.
That's a great way to put it. They need to analyze the law, understand its intent and be able to anticipate potential challenges based on the Commerce Clause and the Dormant Commerce Clause.
And Buffy Kuykendall gives them the tools to do that.
Exactly. It teaches us to look beyond the surface and think about the bigger picture, the economic implications of what states are doing.
Okay, so we've got the Commerce Clause as this safeguard for interstate commerce and the importance of figuring out the real intent behind a law. What's another key takeaway, especially for lawyers and law students who might be dealing with this stuff in their work?
I think it's super important to remember that Buck v. Kuykendall is just one piece of a much bigger puzzle. It's a landmark case, no doubt, but it didn't answer every question about state power over interstate commerce.
So the legal battles are still raging.
Oh, absolutely. And they're getting even more complex as technology changes and the lines between state and national markets get blurrier.
Like what kind of stuff?
Well, think about data privacy, online platforms, the gig economy, all these areas where the Commerce Clause and the Dormant Commerce Clause are being tested and reinterpreted.
It sounds like Buck v. Kuykendall has left a pretty big mark, not just in terms of like settled law, but also by sparking these ongoing debates about who has the power to regulate commerce, the states or the feds.
Exactly. It reminds us that the law is constantly changing to keep up with the world, and for legal professionals, that means staying informed, being flexible, and always being ready to tackle new and unexpected legal questions.
Wow, this has been a fascinating deep dive. I feel like I've learned so much about interstate commerce and how relevant Buck v. Kuykendall still is.
It's been a pleasure exploring this with you, and hopefully our listeners, whether they're seasoned lawyers or just stabbing out, will find this deep dive helpful as they navigate the crazy world of commerce and the law.
Thanks for joining us, and until next time, stay curious.